Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I am Yu Yunzhan, host of our monthly podcast Zhonghua Mundus that brings you recent updates about China's economy. As usual, I have my co-host, our senior fellow, Alicia Garcia Herrero. Hi, Alicia. Welcome back.
Hello, Yu.
And today we're also joined by Ben McWilliams, who is an affiliate fellow here at Bruegel, focusing on energy and climate topics. He has joined us various times in the main podcast channel, but I think this is the first time he joins in our China series. So welcome to Zhonghua Mundus, Ben.
Hi, Ian. Hi, Alicia.
In this episode, we want to explore China's quest for energy self-sufficiency, and especially its attempt to become an electoral state. Can a country transform its vast energy needs into a strategic advantage? And what does it mean for the world if that country is China? Ben, could you start by explaining what we mean when we call China an electoral state? How is this different from being a traditional petrol state?
Sure. So as you say, the word electoral state is a derivation or coming from petrol states. And a petrol state throughout the 20th century was a phenomenon whereby countries were able to derive political and economic power from oil resources. So some obvious ones you would think of: Saudi Arabia, Middle Eastern countries, but also other countries in Africa who derived significant power and had significant influence on domestic politics from these petroleum reserves. Now, as we shift into the 21st century, and particularly into the next couple of decades, increasingly amounts of energy are going to be coming from electricity. And hence, an electoral state is a similar phenomenon, the idea that domestic politics will be significantly shaped by electricity, but also that you might derive political power on the global stage from electricity. There's perhaps one just key difference to line out early on, which is that it is very easy to export oil and gas. And hence, when we talked about a petrostate, we typically talked about a country who is exporting large volumes of oil and gas directly. When we talk about an electrostate, it's a little bit more nuanced because it's quite hard to export lots of electricity. You need a transmission line. They take a while to build, and there's geographical limitations. You can't really build these all the way around the world. And so an electrostate, at least in these early stages, as we think about it more, is very likely to be more about the industrial products you could produce from having lots of electricity, things like aluminium, potentially green steel, and things like solar panels and batteries that you can produce by having a lot of cheap electricity rather than the electricity itself.
Thanks so much, Ben. That's a really great introduction. Alicia, what are the main steps China is taking toward electrification?
So I have to say that although there was a very influential article on the FT on China being an electoral state, I actually think China is still far from that, in the sense that if you look at, you know, the share of renewables in the grid, it's actually lower than many European countries. But on top of that, what we focus on here is transportation. And there, of course, China has done amazing progress. But what is really missing for China to become a true electoral state, and this brings me to Ben's point, is the industrial sector. Basically, to greening that huge industrial sector, for that matter, because it's about 50% of emissions. So, you know, again, one thing is, you know, what you see in terms of urban space and the share of electric vehicles. But the other thing is really where most of the emissions are actually produced. Beyond the industrial sector, we also have to think, and this is quite important in Europe, about buildings in China, which is still a long way to go. So in that regard, I think it's too early to use this word. But, and this brings me to actually the the comparison with, you know, oil. China does have that ambition, because that would put China in an amazing competitive game compared to the rest of the world. So therefore, I do think China has this ambition. I'm just saying that I don't think China is there yet. But China will try very hard to get there before anybody else.
Right. And in your recent analysis, you notice China's clean tech export has shifted from green tech manufacturing to green infrastructure. What does that entail?
Well, just to clarify, exports of green infrastructure, so components of the grid, are still very small. So it's not, there's no such shift yet. But what we try to kind of say in that note or is that, in a way, this has to happen, not so much maybe first exports, but at least investment. So China's Chinese corporates in fixed asset investment in green tech, renewables, is too large to be profitable. The export market, which is obviously dominated by China, can't grow at the pace needed for China's capacity, industrial capacity. So if they want to avoid losses and potentially also a lot of geopolitical tensions, protectionism to be more precise, it will do China well. It will be better if they shift to something they actually need more, which is basically investing in green infrastructure, especially in the grid. So that's kind of the idea. And yes, you're right, Yuyun. Eventually, this is something that the whole world will need to do. So China will have a competitive advantage. China will also export eventually, probably components for the grid to be improved elsewhere in the world. But I think that the process is first they will use it domestically and then they will potentially export.
Okay, I see. So this is more like a recommendation for where China's industrialization should go in the next step. But also you mentioned that this will be easier coming from the protectionism side. Could you explain like how will this shift be easier for China to handle?
Because most of that investment needed for China's upgrade of the grid will be domestic, yeah? So it will not be exported, at least not in the first stages. Therefore, if you think about China reducing capacity or at least investing less in increasing capacity for green tech, for renewables, that will reduce overcapacity, because if we continue at the current levels of investment of into renewables, that will indeed continue to, you know, if we won't go against the wall, because it will continue to increase capacity that nobody can absorb. But in that new sector, shifted investment into the grid will be less subject to confrontation, because it will be used domestically, at least for the time being.
I see. Ben, let me bring you in here. If Alicia's proposal were to come true and China has realized its needs domestically and now it's starting to also export this part of new infrastructure and energy, like you said, green steel, aluminum, like how will that affect the world?
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting question. I think the way maybe to look at it is a comparison with, again, we took petrostates and to compare it a little bit to how the world looked with fossil fuel exports. And I think as a starting position, it's not going to be the same. The power that you had from exporting fossil fuels, if you take kind of the daily dollars spent on importing oil and you compare that to, you know, the annual amount of solar and wind, I don't know the exact numbers, but there will not be as much money spent on these products as there is daily on the flow of oil and gas. And also from a security perspective, again, because we'll be talking less about deriving power from the flow of energy and more about from deriving power from the flow of manufactured products, I think the power is weaker and it's not quite the same as the power that other countries were able to derive from fossil fuels. All of that being said, I think, you know, Chinese capacity to produce things we've already seen for 10 years now is having huge implications on global politics in America. It's kind of one of the top two or three items, it seems, in the political agenda. In Europe, we talk about it a lot, and this ability to kind of absorb or not absorb Chinese overcapacity, and what should we do about it? Should we welcome it? Should we be fighting it? Where I think so far in Europe, there's kind of a differentiated approach in some sectors like the solar panel sector. To my mind, the approach in Europe has essentially been to say, okay, great, China produces so many solar panels so cheaply. We need them. We're just going to accept that we import solar panels from China. Whereas if you move to another sector, electric vehicles, which, okay, electric vehicles, not so much just from the cheap energy. It's more of a kind of specialized product, but still, it's still relevant. And there, the approach is kind of, no, we need to take China on here. We need to impose tariffs. We need to protect our own domestic industry. So I think, in sum, it shouldn't be anything akin to what we've seen in the 20th century and how oil, I mean, in the Middle East shaped, decades of politics there. I don't think it's going to be quite at this level, but it is still going to be important. And I think some of the effects that we already see today in terms of Chinese overcapacity, to my mind, seem similar of what we might see 5, 10 years down the line if China really pursues deep electrification and starts being able to produce even more and more products at cheap levels because they have really exploited the power of the sun, the power of the wind. I think more of these kind of tensions we see today is what we might expect.
In this clean tech race, where do you see Europe's positioning here? You're the one of the co-author of the European Clean Tech Tracker. Maybe you could tell us about how it's developing in this race.
So yeah, we've tried to pull together quite a lot of data, tracking investments, tracking manufacturing capacities across Europe. And I mean, a bottom line takeaway for me is that Europe is doing better than you might typically think if you pick up a newspaper or kind of just hear your friends or colleagues talking about this in batteries and in electric vehicles. Particularly, we're seeing significant growth in investment volumes, and we're seeing significant capacities in Europe. In the wind sector, Europe still has pretty reasonable manufacturing capacity. Same in the heat pump sector. It depends by sector. I mentioned solar in the last answer, and solar, Europe, the capacity in Europe to produce solar panels is essentially diminished. That being said, what we have seen in the solar sector is actually there are a lot of jobs in the solar sector. I think I have to double check our numbers, but it's either the largest or the second largest clean tech employer in Europe. Why? Well, because we import these panels for not so much from China, and all of the jobs are in the installation, the maintenance of these panels. So I actually think across the board, there are kind of ways in Europe in which Europe is actually going quite well in this clean tech space. Not to say everything's perfect and there's nothing to worry about. There certainly are things to worry about. I think in the vehicle manufacturing space, and are European companies moving fast enough? And already we're at this point where Chinese companies have moved faster, and now tariffs are imposed on Chinese electric vehicles because they're, well, we can argue the reasons why they're imposed. But how will those tariffs go? For the time being, they've kind of steadied the import of Chinese EVs. So we, you know, that they've grown over the last couple of years, but for the last months they've plateaued. But as we move forward into the next 1, 2 years, if Chinese electric vehicles become even more price competitive, what will Europe do with this level of tariffs? So yeah, lots of questions, but I think maybe one main takeaway for me, diving into the data over the last year, is that things are going a little bit better than you might typically think just by picking up a paper, as I said.
I just wanted to say that I'm very happy to hear from Ben that things are slightly improving in Europe, because the media is extremely negative on China's overwhelming role in every single, technology, in every single sector. And I sometimes feel that, yeah, while surely true in many ways, I actually also feel that maybe because, again, there's competition among countries, you name it, I feel that we don't necessarily look into our strengths, and we do report failures. I'm sure Ben remembers one I went that, very clearly all over the place. So, I'm happy to hear. And I would ask, sorry, I'm in a way the co-host, so I take the, I use my privileged role here to ask Ben, maybe you could share some examples of where Europe is doing well, and this China's electro state, most welcome, but maybe Europe could also aim at having this competitive advantage that China really wants to have. So So will we get there? And can you see some light at the end of the tunnel? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the example you refer to that's much publicized it is Northvolt and the bankruptcy of Northvolt. But then across the broader battery manufacturing sector, for cell fabrication, which is kind of the most important part of the battery process, it's the most CapEx, the most money goes in there. Europe has a lot of capacity across Hungary, Poland, France, Germany. There's significant facilities. Big capacities which are going along and producing batteries, and lots of automotive manufacturing in Europe who's producing EVs, they're sourcing it from Europe battery cells. A whole nother question is earlier down the value chain, the lithium, etc. Of course, that's a completely different question and something we can talk about. But yeah, so in the battery manufacturing there are capacities and that there's investments going in and facilities being scaled. A question, and perhaps why there was so much attention on Northvolt, comes over the ownership of the company, which again is very, very relevant in this China space. It's also Korean, Japanese companies, particularly over the last 10 years, but a lot of the battery manufacturing capacity we have are from Korean and Japanese companies. Is that a problem? Is that not a problem? It really depends what your political priorities are. Is it about attracting investments and creating jobs and having the factory located inside Europe? Or is it about creating homegrown champions? It depends what your priorities are. And that's really obviously a key question now going forward with China, where CATL now has this big factory they're building in Hungary. BYD has already built a factory, and there's more and more investments being discussed with China in Spain also, of course, CATL and Stellantis considering a battery facility. So yeah, I mean, in terms of examples, I think just looking at battery and again EVs, Europe can produce more EVs than it demands. Germany has a huge annual export of electric vehicles, billions of euros that they export a lot of electric vehicles. And yet the conversation in Germany is still really about this internal combustion phase out. And because of course Germany also exports lots of fossil cars, but there's a lot of tension in Germany over this rule, which I find a little bit strange when they're developing such a big competence for electric vehicles, and you would think there might be some more kind of forward thinking and leaning into this. And okay, let's just embrace this. We're going to get there. Is it going to be 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years? I think it's inevitable we're going to get there. Yeah, well, there's a couple of examples.
Eugene, sorry, because this is so interesting, Ben. So basically, Europe exports, maybe people know, I didn't, large amounts of EVs. Does it mean that our EVs are competitive when looking at Chinese EVs? Because that's not what people have in mind, let me tell you. I would say 99% of Europeans think that our industry will be wiped out.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Do you think European EVs can compete even if we were to lift out the tariffs? What would be your sense?
Yeah, so I mean, I was mentioning Germany. Germany has a lot of exports. Of course, these are also around Europe. EU itself is also exporting. I mean, to America for now at least, and to the UK and to Norway, there's exports. I mean, Chinese electric vehicles are still something. I think it's off the top of my head, it's like 1 in 10 registered electric vehicles in Europe, maybe a bit more than this, 1 in 8, 1 in 7 are Chinese. Which, okay, it's a shock because 4 years ago it was zero, it was nothing. So it is a shock. It's jumped up a lot, but still, I think that this kind of like rate of change versus where we're at has kind of been a bit confused. And it's not that all of a sudden everybody is buying a Chinese electric vehicle. I mean, I just think everyone who listens, if you think of your friends, your colleagues, anyone who owns a Chinese electric vehicle, probably not over the last year. There's a few more coming in, but so I think they're still very much at the early stage. And maybe just on price and cutthroat competition, it's hard to compete with them. But there's so many other elements, not least just brand recognition. People for many years have bought cars because they want a BMW, they want an Audi, they want this other car, and it's hard. And you see again Chinese like Geely, for example, coming in with Volvo because it's hard just to put your car in there and compete on brands. So I definitely think on electric vehicles, whether if the tariff was removed, what the effect would be, it's kind of hard. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think they're between sort of 10 to 30%. So it's probably not, well, that is quite a significant amount. Yeah, I avoid this question. I
Sorry,
don't.
10 to 30% cheaper. That's what you mean?
No,
Okay.
I think the tariff levels, so the tariffs, right, were,
18 to 30
is
plus,
it 18? Yeah,
but
exactly. No, that's what I was saying. What the tariff is set at, which is, well, significant tariff, I guess.
so Europe might not become electrostate. You didn't answer that one yet, but Europe might still export EVs, cars in the
No,
future.
I think so. I mean, is Europe going to export a lot of electric vehicles to China? I'm not sure, but I would
Not
especially
like that.
think to North America, because I mean, imagine that North America, okay, for the next 4 years, no chance, but who knows how it looks in 4 years or in 8 years. At some point, I suspect America is going to, I don't know how long they will take, but at some point there will be, not necessarily the whole fleet becomes electric overnight, but at some point there'll be a growing share of electric vehicles. Beyond Tesla, Ford are doing a little bit, but there's a big market there at some point to compete in. So the rest of the world will be interesting. I mean, rest of the world, how do you compete with the Chinese in, growing African market, growing South American? It looks hard. But it's a huge market, so there's some space, but yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah, I do think in the emerging markets that you mentioned, price would be a huge competition, right?
Yeah, I think we start to see the data that China is taking in these. I think over the last 6, 12 months, you start seeing this data coming in that China is starting to get significant market share there for electric vehicles, as the models are kind of becoming cost competitive with fossil cars, right? As you're kind of seeing a gradual shift in the emerging markets towards electric vehicles. My understanding so far is that's looking pretty good for China and not so great for Europe. So it's more about our own market and maybe a few neighboring markets, Norway or UK, America.
Okay, that's super interesting. So we're already at the end of the question. Let me ask you just to have a closing remark. So maybe I'll start with you, Alicia. Like, where do you see this electrostate strategy for China is going? What would be potentially the challenges? Because you already talked about a little bit now is in the domestic side, but then maybe when it exports more internationally, where do you see the opportunities and the challenges there?
Well, I do think China is going to prioritize this vision of electrostate in, by the way, the incoming 5-year plan. It seems to, that the targets for, I mean, China will peak, everybody knows, emissions earlier than expected, 2027, if not earlier. So, they can be bolder. So probably we'll hear more. And I think the concept of electrostate might even be there in a different form. So I think this is quite important. But let's not the other sector, by the way, is unrelated to this podcast, but because I said two is biotech, which is very important for Europe too. So I leave it there. We can have another podcast on that one. But I think what we Europeans need to understand is that while China's early compliance with, targets or pledges basically is most welcome for the world, Europe has to see this also as a competitive edge for China. So we need to basically realize that if China achieves that very cheap energy earlier than anybody else, we have an issue, we Europeans. That's for me is the key message, that we really need to run faster rather than more slowly, because we need to get there too if we want to compete, if we want our industrial sector to continue to compete, if we want our electric vehicles to be able to be exported because they can be produced more cheaply, we need to get there. If not, as well, actually, our targets are sooner than China if you think about it. So the question is, can we do it? So that I would leave it there.
Thanks very much, Alicia. Ben, let me come to you.
Yeah, I think I would echo the same point that, especially today with a lot of pushback on the climate agenda and particularly from America coming and pressure to buy more fossil fuels, which perhaps sounds attractive in the short run, but not only to look to China and this potential opportunity of electrostate and deriving power from that, but to think where we are today in this fossil fuel era. And again, in 2022, the energy crisis, and not just 2022, but previous crises, Europe doesn't produce many fossil fuels, and we are dependent upon importing fossil fuels, and that is not giving kind of huge industrial strength to Europe. So there is an opportunity here to go down the same route, which China is in some ways lagging behind in certain aspects, but in other ways kind of surging ahead and kind of showing a path for Europe of what such a future might look like as an electro state. So I think taking that lesson and thinking smartly about how Europe moves in this direction, which is not just about huge subsidies and investing lots and lots more money. That's not just what you ask. It's also things like the electricity grid across Europe, which is a huge comparative advantage, that this is this enormous electricity grid, but that we don't really use very smartly, and we don't really trade so smartly or make investments so smartly around Europe in terms of grid capacity. But yeah, I think the same message, which is appropriate for the podcast, thinking of this future of electro states, what it looks like, and kind of how China is courting a path in that direction.
Yeah, I remember our colleague Georg Zachman had a nice paper about updating Europe's power grid system. Thank you very much for the interesting conversation. I am Yuyun Zhan, and I am with my Bruegel colleagues, Alicia Garcia Herrero and Ben Mike Williams. We're going to link all the articles we mentioned in the show notes, including the FTE Electoral State article, which sparked our conversation in the first place, Alicia's analysis, Ben's European Clean Tech Tracker, and also the electricity grid paper by Georg. For listeners, you can find all this research at Bruegel.org and sign up for Zhonghua Mundus, our monthly China podcast and newsletter, with link in the show notes. Until next time, bye bye.